Well, as I mentioned earlier on the show, I had a chance to spend last week in Paris. And so in Paris, I had some wonderful baguettes, wonderful breads. And so I really enjoyed that part of my trip. And I'm certain I didn't get the food poisoning I got from the bread itself. Paul Novak of Madison, a very well-known bread maker and teacher. He's a yoga instructor as well as our guest now. He's right now, as I'm speaking, cutting up some bread that he has just baked, and the smell is incredible. Talking with him today about baking bread, we'll maybe zero in a little bit about breads of the holiday season. We can talk about Yule Kaka, for example, with him. And if you have some bread-making questions or maybe roll-making questions, give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or in the Madison area, reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890. Give us a call with your questions and comment. Paul Novak, welcome back.
Well, it's good to be here, Larry.
You're always a popular guest around Wisconsin Public Radio.
You know, I bring my bribe.
And what did you bring us today?
Well, you mentioned it, Yule Kaka.
And what's the history of Yule Kaka? You know, some people I know are listening and saying, what the heck is Yule Kaka?
Well, Yule for Christmas and Kaka in a sense for bread are for cake, but it's really a bread. So it's a rich Christmas bread done in Norway, done in Sweden. And I'm sure people have different takes on it, but it's got butter. And not so much sugar, but cardamom, a spice that I love, and raisins. And so it's a very simple, in a way, white bread. Mm-hmm. And I glazed it today with whole egg. So it's really
looks
glossy.
Beautiful. Yeah, it's beautiful.
Yes.
And that goes back, so I suppose our Norwegian ancestors brought it over?
Yes, and I'm Polish, but I've learned to make lefse and Yule Kaka, et cetera.
Well, I tell you what, I know we're going to get a chance to taste it, and we'll talk some more about it as we go along here. But already, a lot of people with questions for you. So we are going to turn to the phones and to Frank in Green Bay first, who has a question for you. Frank, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thank you. Well, actually, I don't have a question. But I have a comment.
Yeah.
You were talking about that wonderful French bread you had.
Yeah.
Julia Child did a few cookbooks, and her very first cookbook, in that book are French bread recipes, and what a lot of people don't realize is she spent purposely over 2 years perfecting that recipe so that if you used it, you would get the French bread that is made in Paris and in France.
Yeah. And
well, I'll have to say she tried to do that.
Now, why do you say she tried?
Well, because the French are going to use a different flour than is available in the U.S.
What I got that from, you know, after she died, they did all these biographies.
Yeah.
And on one of them, they talked about that effort and what she did to make that happen.
Yeah.
So what she tried to do is emulate that, but
yeah. She didn't like sloppy recipes. She wanted them to be specific, and she wanted anybody to be able to take that recipe and duplicate it. Yeah. And so that's why she spent that time trial and error perfecting so that if anybody used that recipe, they'd get a positive result.
Yeah. Right. But nowadays, people are more apt to try to get flour that is like the French flour. So if you, for example, go to King Arthur's catalog, they sell a French-style flour, which flour's different in terms of ash content. It's not just protein and gluten. What strain, what part, not just what kind of wheat it was, but how it was milled, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So that's a whole thing, the ingredients. And then there's the difference in the different ovens. It's hard to do in a home oven, emulate a commercial oven.
Yeah, yeah.
And if you've got a brick-lined or stone-lined oven fired with wood, it's just not going to be the same in a in a home oven.
Yeah, it's not.
I know she tried to do that. I'd say a lot of people are going to say that she was not quite successful at doing it.
What is it about the breads that I tasted were so great? It was nice, crusty outside, and sort of a softer inside. That flavor was just great.
And one thing about them, though, is that they're meant to be eaten on that day.
Yeah,
they stale very quickly. So people buy them on a daily basis, and people in France are not necessarily going to be making them at home because there's so many places that make them in the bakeries. So part of it is the oven, part of it is the flour, part of it is the techniques, et cetera, et cetera.
And part of it is it's the same day, it's right there, and you've just, you know, they've just, it's probably almost just come out of the oven.
So when I have in my cookbook or when I teach making French baguettes, I'm just making a facsimile of it, something like it. And I prefer bread that doesn't stale that quickly. So I'm not really trying to make exactly that same thing either.
Yeah, interesting. Thanks, Frank, for calling. I want to give some others a chance to get on. I appreciate your call. Sue has got a question for you from Milwaukee. So let's go to Sue. Hi, Sue.
Hi, Mr. Novak. I'm calling. I come from a part of the state, Buffalo County, where there were a lot of Swiss people. Mm-hmm. And they made this pear bread at Christmas time. My mother didn't, but we... neighbors did. It was just wonderful. It was a very heavy, heavy bread that you'd slice quite thin and toasted. It was wonderful. Now, I have seen recipes, but none of them seem to be like what I remember. Some call for fresh pears, some call for ground. The nuts that I think I remember were black walnuts, which, of course, were available free for nothing all over the place. And I thought it had anise as a flavoring. Is this something you're familiar with? And could you suggest a cookbook that might have an authentic recipe?
It's not one I'm familiar with, but there are a lot of Christmas or holiday breads that try to go for density. And putting in fruit would be one example.
Yeah.
And putting in any nut, almonds or walnuts or whatnot, especially if it's as a meal, gives it extra heft also. More nutrition, of course, but a richer flavor. There should be a Swiss cookbook out there, I would think, that would have this sort of a thing.
And they seem to have dates in them and things like that, which I sure don't remember. I remember those, like citron or something, little hard hunks of stuff that I didn't like when I was little.
Pecans, maybe?
No. This was a fruit, a dried fruit of some kind.
And I could imagine that somebody was actually using almost the fresh fruit also. You know, dried.
Well, yeah, you had dry, it on your tree.
But dried a bit and... maybe even plumped up in a sense. I'm not sure how you would do
tell
that.
Tell you what, I went online and I just Googled in pear bread, and the first one up said great lightly toasted, and it has 2 cups of peeled shredded pears. And the reason I mentioned pecans was because it also said you could put in a cup of chopped pecans, but it was the very first.
Okay, well, that's what we'll do then. We'll just Google that thing and try to find one.
It was the very first one. Said, this bread is great, lightly toasted for breakfast or any time.
Oh, because it was the whole house filled with the smell. It was just wonderful. Thanks so much.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it.
It's always amazing to me the varieties of breads that different cultures have created.
Well, I was pretty interested in that myself because we had some pears as a gift. And, you know, you have a lot of pears, and it might be fun to make some pear bread. Maybe I can talk my wife into it. She's the baker in the family.
So do you let these dry a bit and then shred them, or it can't be completely juicy?
I don't know. We'll have to look that up. Grated pears. No, it says, it doesn't say anything. It just said grate the pears and put them in with oil and eggs and sugar, pecans and vanilla, blend and stir until just moistened. Spoon batter into a 2 greased pan.
And I would guess you would want a pear that's not too ripe and not too juicy. One of the drier sorts.
That would be. The reviews are 5 stars. I've made this bread for years now, and every time I make it, I get another compliment on it. So it's. It's one of those. I tell you what, I might be making some pear bread over the weekend, or maybe I talk my wife into it. I hope I can talk her into it. She's a better baker than I am, for sure.
There's very few things that you cannot put into bread.
Paul Novak of Madison, our guest today, as we talk with him about Yule Kaka and other breads of the holiday season, and any bread, as a matter of fact. We're looking forward to your calls here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking breads and bread making today with Paul Novak of Madison, noted bread maker and teacher. He's the author of a couple of books, A Baker's Dozen of Daily Breads and More. I happen to have in front of me. It's a wonderful cookbook. I've used it for years. And he's taught classes. Matter of fact, you have a class coming up, don't you?
March 1st at MATC in Madison.
Madison.
French baguettes. Other times I do sourdough breads or healthy breads.
So you're going to do French baguettes March 1st, so go online to the MATC website, I assume?
Right. It's matcmadison.edu.
.edu. Any copies of your book left?
I've got a couple more. I run into them once in a while. So I have one copy of the first edition, and I've got another copy of the second edition.
So how do people, if they wanted to pick that up?
Easiest way would be to get to write me.
Okay.
And it's 526 Glenway Street, Madison, 53711.
526 Glenway, Madison, and
53711.
53711. Okay, we'll give that again. 5266, right?
No, 526.
526 Glenway.
Yeah.
All right, Madison. Okay. Well, I'll tell you what, I have questions for you, but so does Bill in Pewaukee. So let's go to Bill. Hi, Bill.
Good morning, Larry and Paul. It's nice to talk with you. Hopefully you can help me reconstruct a bread recipe that my dad used to make in the 50s, and it's different from most of the breads that I've ever had. It's a heavy bread. It's very firm, and it's solid. Some influence from his Norwegian mother. I don't know if it's just ingredients or if it's a special technique or what you might want to suggest.
Now, is it a white bread or is it
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it was a white bread.
Yes.
Okay. Any whole wheat in it at all?
Or no.
All
no.
White bread. Any potato in it?
Nope.
Okay.
It was a heavy bread.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Very firm. Not many bubbles in the bread.
Okay. Was it any other particles in it or of anything that you could see? You know, wheat
no.
germ or...
No, he wasn't much for doing anything fancy.
Okay.
So it would have been a very straightforward recipe,
yeah,
probably.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Then it would probably... Did it have much of a crust?
A nice crust, mm-hmm. We used to put butter in the top of it, and, it was nice.
Okay, so I would guess that it had a lot of moisture in it then, perhaps. And then as it baked, it stayed moist. Is that your sense of it, that it was a moist bread?
Not my feeling that it was moist, particularly.
Because I'm not sure how, when a white bread, you would get a solid bread
uh-huh.
without moisture or with other
without
added
something.
Ingredients to it.
Yeah, no, as far as I know, there weren't extra ingredients in there. But I don't know. The recipe has been long gone, and much to my chagrin, because I really used to enjoy them.
It is always the problem with heritage recipes that people... Yeah. Either they weren't written down, or there's not anybody around who still knows how to do it, and
it was a
pinch of this and a handful of that.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what, if anybody knows about a dense white bread with a fairly simple, straightforward bread, and Paul's going to ponder this too as we go along, but somebody else may call in with some suggestions too, Bill, so stay listening.
Thank you very much.
All right, thanks for calling. We'll ponder that one a little bit. It's hard to imagine, actually, without some additional...
Yeah, you could add more shortening, more fat or something. That is apt to make a bread denser.
Yeah.
If it's Norwegian, it could also be sweet. That's the other way you could go.
Yeah.
The Yule Kaka has a fair amount of sugar and butter in it.
Oh, that's...
And it's basically a white bread.
And the Yule Kaka you made is wonderful. Golly. I wish everybody else could have a sample of that bread. Oh, it's great. Well, Maureen, and maybe somebody else will call in too with an idea. Maureen in Woodstock, Illinois, will go to you. Hi, Maureen.
Yes, hi. Thank you for taking my call. I have a question regarding what is the chemical reaction of cream of tartar and baking powder and baking soda to flour?
Cream of tartar is usually just with egg whites and such. And that's how that's often used. It's a byproduct of winemaking. And baking powder, baking soda, the baking powder or soda has to have something acidic, which is often when you have a buttermilk thing, you're going to use sour baking soda. Baking powder really is just a chemical reaction of the water once you add it to that, and it creates the bubbles and the carbon dioxide.
Okay.
So those are usually done when you're not using yeast. You want to get your leavening agent.
Okay.
There are breads that throw in baking powder or baking soda along with yeast, so you can do both in a sense.
Okay. For example, I have a couple of recipes for bread, and one calls for baking powder and cream of tartar. No baking soda, but a little bit of salt.
And I think the cream, the tartar also creates carbon dioxide, or it changes the acidity of this. So if that's what it calls for, fine. It's an easy thing to add in.
Right.
But usually those are quick breads.
Yes, they are.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Lorna in Watertown, your turn. Hi, Lorna.
Hi. How are you?
Good, thank you.
Appreciate you taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question about sponge. I have two breads that I love to make. One is an Italian bread and one's a rye bread, and they both ask you to make a sponge a day or two ahead of time. And I'm wondering, what is the advantage of the sponge?
What is a sponge, by the way, as well, Paul?
It's essentially a way to pre-start your bread and have a dough that's often moist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But part of it is that it sits there and, in a sense, ages, and the flavor develops.
Yes.
The idea most people have about breads is you want to take longer time, not less time.
Yes.
Even the breads that talk about doing it quickly usually have some factor in there to slow it down.
Oh, okay.
And so the time of it will help to, in a sense, dissolve things and break down some of the starches into sugars, etc.
Oh, okay.
And then the next day you continue on.
Yeah. Well, sometimes I left it more than a day. I've left it as often as 3 days.
Sure.
And it works beautifully. But I never understood why or what the reason for it was.
And if you leave it long enough, you're actually going to start capturing wild yeast and bacteria. And in a sense, you're going to have almost a sourdough action going on there too.
Yeah, it doesn't have a sourdough flavor if it just sits for a couple of days, but
no.
Yeah, it's similar to a sourdough, I imagine.
Right. In that short time, you're just going to have those agents as working for leavening reasons.
Okay. Well, I appreciate
essentially
you telling me.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for calling. Appreciate it. And Tanya in Mineral Point may have some light to shed on that white bread, I think. Tanya, hi.
Hi. How are you doing today?
Great. Thank you.
Great. It's kind of funny that I actually turned on the radio and was running an errand because I had just looked at a bread recipe that I probably haven't made in over 10 years. It's in a book called The Spice Cookbook, and I believe the author is Annabelle Day, co-authored. It's actually an out-of-print book that I did some research on a while ago when I lost my original just to get a white bread recipe that is very similar to what the gentleman was describing. I just looked at it recently because I was going to make it over the holidays and never got around to it. I think the secret to that heavier white bread is actually eggs and scalded milk. And I'd be happy to email the recipe in to NPR, post it on the website, et cetera. It's a fabulous recipe that my children grew up with.
Oh, that'd be wonderful.
What's it called in that book?
Actually, in the book, it's referred to as poppy seed egg braid. The book itself describes putting the bread, laying it out, and then braiding it and putting the poppy seeds in the middle, which we never did that. We just made it as a white bread and sprinkled poppy seeds on top. And we actually didn't make two loaves. We combined it into a wreath, a braided wreath, and cooked it right on a pizza sheet. And so my kids grew up thinking of this as strictly a Christmas bread just because of the shape. But it has that very heavy, dense flavor, but it doesn't get dry. It's a beautiful bread.
Oh, that's wonderful. Could you email that to us?
We sure will. We'll get it out of the old cookbook, dust it off a little bit, and I'll email it on.
And we'll put it up on my website.
Not a problem.
All right. Thank you, Tanya.
Yeah,
Thank you.
This Ulekaka also has two eggs in it, so it's a common thing. I don't think of this as a heavy bread, but I suppose in a sense, in terms of a white bread,
it is heavy.
It is heavy. It is dense in a way, and so that would be different ways to go about it.
Exactly, but not sweet. Like the bread that you're describing.
Yeah, but not sweet. Yeah. Well, send me that recipe.
Will do.
All right. Thanks, Tanya.
Thank you. Have a good Happy New Year.
You too. Happy New Year to you. All right. Well, I hope our earlier caller is still listening in, because won't be long. We'll have that up on our website. Sally in Middleton, it is your turn. Hi, Sally.
Hello. I missed part of the beginning. I remember with great pleasure a bread that I grew up with that we had to go to the bakery for, and it was a rice flour bread, and it had a very fine texture, very white looking, and it was just lovely. It was, far better than anything you could buy off the shelf. Is there a recipe? Do you know anything about a rice flour bread, or is there a recipe you could tell me where to look for it?
Do you have a sense if that was a yeast bread or not?
I have a sense it was. It looked just like it was good sized, and like it had somebody had lifted it up.
Because the reason I ask is, if you had a yeast bread, you're going to have some gluten in there, which is going to come from wheat flour, because rice flour doesn't have any.
Yeah.
And many people nowadays make breads with the flours that don't have any gluten in them. And, of course, then they're having to make them as quick breads using the baking powder, baking soda, cream of tartar, et cetera.
Mm.
So if this had a lot of rice flour in it.
It was very white, it was good size. It wasn't flat or anything. It was a good big loaf of bread.
So I would guess it was a yeast bread with wheat in it also.
Okay.
And if you wanted to make a basic white bread, and put in, let's say, about one-third of that, try one-third of the flour as rice flour, that would probably work.
Do the trick.
Can you find rice flour?
Oh, sure.
Okay.
If you would go to a like Williamson Street Co-op, there are places that have all these non-gluten flours, barley flour, rice flour, et cetera.
Thank you very much. It was excellent bread.
Thank you, Sally, for calling. Bob in Stoughton, your turn. Hi, Bob.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call, Larry.
Sure.
We're trying to replicate my mom's tea ring recipe, and I made it for Christmas, and have some questions on kneading the bread and how elastic the dough should be, and just some tips on the process of actually kneading bread.
I always try to have the bread somewhat moist when I'm kneading it. And even when I'm done kneading it, I'd like it to still be a bit moist. Then you can bake it in terms of a bread where you want to get a crust, then you can get a good crust and still have the insides moist. A lot of things you don't care about the crust, but still you don't want necessarily the inside to dry out that much. The reason I mention it is a lot of the old cookbooks will talk about getting your bread satiny when you're done.
Uh-huh.
I think sometimes that means the bread's a little too dry.
Ah.
So to me, if it's still a little bit sticky after your, let's say, 8 minutes of kneading,
uh-huh.
to me, that's still okay.
So use a little less flour then when you knead it?
Yeah, and be, just incorporate it in slowly. Don't assume that the recipe is right with the amount of flour. Just always leave out one cup, and then perhaps you're going to knead that in, and perhaps you're not.
Okay.
That's the way I approach it.
All right, that might help. Thank you.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. You can join in, too. We have some open lines at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. Give us a call. We'll get you on pretty quickly. Ken in Hingham, you are next. Hi, Ken.
Hi. Happy holidays to you.
Yeah, yes. To you as well.
My question is, I guess we're in the market for a new kitchen stove, and we're looking at Vikings and Wolves, and there's always that controversy of we want the gas top, but is it worth spending the extra, basically a couple thousand, to get a dual-fuel electric oven, or with breads and your other baking experience, do you have an opinion on that?
Well, most commercial bakeries, probably all commercial bakeries, are going to have gas.
Okay.
And I prefer, in a home oven, a gas oven. I have a hard time with electric. Yeah. And I like gas burners because when you turn them off, they're off. You turn electric element just keeps the heat for quite a while. So that's why commercial places want sort of instant heat off. They're not going to have convection ovens either. That's essentially for cakes and such. You don't need a convection oven for breads. Now, if you can get a steam injector in your oven, now that's something to go for.
Thank you very much.
That'll add a couple of bucks.
Yeah.
Thanks, Ken, for calling. Appreciate it. Yep, that'll add a couple of dollars. Bill in Bayfield County, your turn. Hi, Bill.
Hello. The fellow that was called earlier about the heavy white bread, I get a loaf of bread from the Great Harvest Bread Company. I'm not connected with them, but it's in Fargo, North Dakota, and they take orders, and it has four ingredients, and this little loaf weighs over 2 pounds. It's just absolutely delicious bread, and I don't know how they do it, but...
What are the four ingredients now?
I don't have the white in front of me, but the white is the same. It's wheat, water, honey, yeast, and salt.
Yeah.
And this little tiny loaf weighs 35 ounces, which is 2 pounds, 3 ounces.
So is it moist inside?
It's fairly moist, and it's like no other bread I ever ate. And when you bite into it, toasted, it's delicious. It's chewy, and it's they do take phone orders, too. And if you can find that, it's just my favorite bread.
It's so, the Great Harvest Bread Company?
Yeah, Fargo, North Dakota. And this says orders welcome. It's 293-9382. I just bought 7 loaves because I don't come across it very often. But he described it exactly. And how they do it, I don't know. When you look at the commercial breads and you see all those ingredients and you wonder, what are you eating? And it's just nice to see this real basic bread that's delicious.
And that is one way to go about it, is just to get your insides really quite moist, and therefore it's going to be heavier.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just thought I'd pass that along.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling.
Thank you.
A lot of certain pumpernickel breads are very moist, almost like Boston steam bread, where you slice them very thinly, and you can almost feel the moisture in the slice.
Appreciate that call. Stella in Sturgeon Bay, it is your turn. Hi, Stella.
Hi. I need to brag on my husband's bread.
All right.
He bakes all of our bread, and it's a whole spelt. We use a whole spelt flour, and that's all the flour that we use. And we make a fruit bread. We get wonderful dried blueberries that are dried with apple concentrate. We can't eat sugar. So they're dried with an apple concentrate, and we load it up with those and cut up fruit leather. So there's chunks of fruit. It's very, very fruity. And we used to put pecans in it, but we found that we like walnuts better now. And then we use a little bit of agave to feed the yeast, which is a cactus nectar.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. A very concentrated sweetener. And then also include... cinnamon, cardamom, ground cardamom, and vanilla. And we find that for some reason those spices have a preservative effect. Generally, the bread isn't around long enough to get moldy, but
yeah.
Sometimes have been slow eating it, and it's never molded.
The bread I make doesn't have artificial ingredients, and it will take much longer to mold than than commercial breads that have the preservatives in them.
Yeah.
It's
and it's a nice, dense, it's a dense, heavy, moist bread that's absolutely delicious.
And I should mention that, spelt is in a sense an old-fashioned wheat variety. So it does have gluten, but it's a different, both different carbohydrate compositions. So people sometimes who are sensitive to wheat are not sensitive to spelt.
Right. It actually is a different grain than wheat. And there are, you're correct. I thank you for mentioning that. I wanted to mention that some wheat sensitivities, if they are not gluten-based, can eat spelt okay.
Right, right. I just mean it's related to wheat.
Right.
Emmer is an old-fashioned wheat variety mentioned in the Bible, and there are these other farro, and there are these other grains that have gluten, and therefore, in a sense, they're related to wheat.
Yeah, spelt used to be called dinkel, and it's the grain that European immigrants brought to this country before wheat was developed.
Yep. Yeah. Dinkel. Yep. Thank you.
Uh-huh.
Appreciate it, Stella. Learn something new every day. By golly. Warren in Madison, it's your turn. Hi, Warren.
Hi. Good afternoon, gentlemen. I wonder if you could give me a suggestion for an ingredient in pizza crust that would impart a strong soda cracker taste.
Soda cracker taste.
People put various other flours into pizza crust. So I'll mention a couple of them. Chez Panisse, a famous restaurant in Berkeley, Alice Waters would put a little bit of rye flour into her crust. You could also put a bit of a durum flour, which is the flour usually used for pastas. Other people put some cornmeal in. Those are the three that I'm familiar with.
Okay.
Somebody else might be putting in something yet again.
Yeah.
So if you look at like all the different flatbreads out there, which is essentially crackers is one type.
Yeah.
People use barley, for example. People use oat. To me, it's experimentation.
Yeah, we're going to have to try and experiment a little bit. Paul, always a pleasure. I want to remind everybody, got a class March 1st in Madison at Madison Area Technical College.
Right.
So go online to the MATC website in Madison and find out about getting into that class. And still a couple copies of your book left.
Right, exactly.
And just write to Paul Novak at 526 Glenway, Madison, and the zip code is 53711.
Yeah, we'll go for first come, first serve on those.
Paul, it's always a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Larry.
Paul Novak of Madison, noted bread maker, professional instructor, and author of a book, A Baker's Dozen of Daily Breads and More. Thank you all very much for listening. I'll be back tomorrow. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.